Like, how stupid are these women? And then what would I have done that would have made me smarter, gotten me out of this? And then also, you got to remember, when we're watching scary movies and we're watching true crime documentaries, we're in a safe space. We feel safe. We don't feel like we're in any kind of danger. So it gives us the opportunity to kind of ponder what we would do different, how we would do it different, et cetera.
Kind of like when guys watch zombie movies and they're like, okay, that idiot clearly did not. Like, I'll give you an example. The one behind me, the prequel, Soul Station, to Train to Busan. Uh-huh. There is a scene where the main girl is trying to get away from these creatures, and it's been it's established in Train to Busan that they can't open doors. They don't know how to
work. Yes. I did see that.
She leaves every single door behind her wide open.
That dumb bitch.
And I'm sitting here, I'm like, and so that's what you're saying, basically. It's like, I would not do that. I would know, you know, to at least close it. So even if she, because this is the prequel, even if she doesn't know that that's the case, a closed door is still a second or two that it takes for them to get through versus, I mean, you know, immediately just running through them.
Yeah. You know? I think it's part of that. I also, there's another thing that I didn't mention that is a huge factor. Women, they're scared in specific situations when they need to be. Obviously, when you are the victim or you are about to be a victim, et cetera, there's nothing you can do. But it is widely known that women know how to naturally lower their heart rate. I don't know how we do it. I don't know the trick. Allegedly, we know how to do that. It's what helps us be a better aim when we're fucking shooting. I think it helps during these true crime documentaries that we're not so panicked, and that's why they get more enjoyment, but they get that excitement of the fear too. Like, oh my God, you know? And then same thing with scary movies, you get the fear excitement going on, but also your heart rate's down enough that you're not feeling panicked.
Well, the one of them at work, and I can't say this for the other one, but one of them that's really into that stuff, the one that said that she had to get off TikTok because of the mental stuff, she had a very traumatic childhood. Like, I mean, I'm talking like the kind of childhood that nobody would ever ask to have. So I think it's like almost like not aversion therapy, but like some kind of way to, like, you know, through the misery of others, kind of like process her own like trauma. You know what I'm saying? So I get that for her. But the other one makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, she has a shitty home life, don't get me wrong, but, like, it's not the same kind of home life. It's not at all, so.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, like I said, the excitement, the heart rate, the how would I do this differently, you know?
I just coming from a guy's point of view, like, I don't know many guys who are into true crime. I mean, I know there is, but when guys listen to true crime, they don't listen to it for any of that stuff. It's literally like, can I solve this puzzle before the podcast is over with? Like, it's more of a mental exercise, you know?
It's funny. I feel like I do that even when I already know how it ended.
Yeah.
You know?
But I'm just saying, I do that to
movies, too. I feel like I've seen movies where it's like, you know, the ending, and I'm like, okay, but what if? And it doesn't change it.
But yeah, I think it's, I don't know, for guys, it's totally different. Cause like when if I'm reading about a serial killer, I'm not reading for the same reasons. Like, I'm reading like just for the, I mean, that's not, there is some similarities. I mean, I know some women want the psychology of it.
Yeah.
And that's, if I'm reading about a serial killer, it's more the psychology. Like, I could give, like, the other stuff, I'm like, this is nasty. I don't want to know anything about their, you know, what they did to their victims. But whenever it's talking about the home life and what led to them being that way.
Oh, yeah.
That's the stuff that's the best part of it, just because it's like, okay, this is how people get fucked up, you know?
Yeah. I just realized I still have my high-heeled boots on, and I'm like, why the fuck do I have these on? I'm at home.
Yeah.
I literally ran upstairs.
You're not trying to impress anybody, at least. I mean, if you are, you need to send some of that money to the, you know, Death Holler Fund if you're using that on your OnlyFriends or whatever.
Only Fears.
Yeah.
Anyways, you ready to start the podcast?
Yep.
All right. Which one are we starting with first?
I'm doing Train to Busan just because I feel like Romero should have the last zombie, of the season.
Sounds good. Give me one second. I didn't open up the notes. There they are. Okay. In all their glory. All right. Recording in 3, 2, 1.
In 2022, our death holler brought us season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. Now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bashing in the head, that seems to work out.
Except the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. Stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Everyone, and welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, the Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host, Law Urena. Urena, you made it. The tunnel out of the zombie apocalypse is just ahead. Are you going to miss it?
I'm so glad we're almost done. I mean, this has been a good season, though. The movies have been good. I'm not going to pretend that they haven't, but fuck, man, I'm so over it.
Yeah, I figured that you would have probably peaced out by now, but you were a trooper and you stayed with it, so.
I did it.
You did it, Joe.
we did it, Joe.
Yes, everyone, this is our final episode of Zombie Season. While we didn't cover everything, we hit the high points. And like the zombies themselves, I'm sure we'll eventually come back to this topic again. With a sequel trilogy to 28 Days Later firing up.
Oh, my God. We have to review that when it comes out, though.
Yeah, we'll cover it when it comes out. Because, I mean, they're supposed to be coming out one every year for the next, 3 years. So, that'd be good.
I feel like that's doing too much. It's going to turn into Star Wars.
Yeah, but Star Wars could have been good if somebody could have actually written it well. I mean, let's just be honest.
Okay, we'll see.
But regardless, because of that, it seems zombies are making a comeback in cinema. Not to mention, we never actually got around to covering The Walking Dead. Yeah. Lord only knows that thing went on forever and spun off like a million, little shows or whatever of its own. So.
Yeah, I forgot. That was so good when it first came out. I hyperventilated during one episode. Woo!
It took a nosedive when Shane left the show, and I never bothered with it after Glenn was not on there any longer.
I still can't believe that, because there was still good stuff. I really feel like when they really, abandoned the comics, that's when the show really took a shit. But the you kind of had to abandon the comics, to be fair.
I heard the comics actually took a shit in the final, few that they did. So it's not like
I wouldn't be surprised. I will say where I dropped off on the comics, it got the humans got crazy. So,
well, they did like a major time jump in the comics too, to where it's like Carl's now like the leader, and it's like 20 years on, and there's pirates and like people. I don't know. I saw random like comics at the store, and whenever I saw like Michonne was almost like a pirate or something, I'm like, fuck this, I'm done. Like, this is, I don't want Michonne, you know, like pulling a Johnny Depp and, you know, being Captain Jack Sparrow or anything.
Yeah.
But that pilot episode for The Walking Dead is fucking amazing, and we'll eventually get back to it and cover that, and probably the show in general. How would you like to do that if we went back to it? Would you just want to like a general summary or thoughts of each season, or, you know, up to a certain point, or because I feel like discussing each episode is way too much.
It's way too much. I don't even know.
Unless we did like highlight episodes, like when the governor, you know, attacked the prison, or, you know, something like that.
I think that would be a tough one. We'd have to like go through the most seasons that either, well, I went through a lot. I feel like I made it through more seasons than you did.
I literally quit after Glenn. So, I mean, now I've went back and I've seen some episodes after that, because it, you know, AMC has this thing, or had this thing for a while, where they would just play it on a loop. And so I was watching it that way.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like we could technically go through each season and maybe pick your favorite episode. I pick my favorite episode and go from there. Otherwise, that's just too much. I'd have to rewatch each season to even be able to recap each season. And I don't know that I'm committed. Maybe the first three or four seasons tops.
Those are the main ones that would be worth it if you wanted to go in depth. I mean, to do anything with it.
So I don't know. I don't know that I'm committed to that.
Well, we got a lot more other stuff before we ever come back to that, fine. Hell, they might restart the show with, like, somebody else by the time we get back to it. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. AMC's still milking that thing like it's...
They have so many fucking spinoffs. I remember when they had the walkthrough at Universal, like, oh, my God.
Yeah, now that Daryl Dixon's got his, like, second or third season coming out for just his stuff with Carol and... I did want to watch Dead City though, that had Jeffrey Dean Morgan and what's her name in it that played Maggie from Supernatural. You know, she was Bella in Supernatural, I believe, is who she played.
I forgot about that.
I did want to see that because those are two good actors, good actors, and I think that them in New York City would make for a pretty interesting show, but I never got around to watching it.
I just can't, like, I can't fathom in real life. Obviously, this is a TV show and a comic, but, like, you killed my, in a sense, husband, the father to my child, and I have to survive with you?
Yeah, that's the thing. Seeing the two of them, it's Lauren Cohen, by the way, is the actress.
How bad do you want to live? Like, I guess, you know.
Well, see, they kind of did away with a little bit of that drama in the show, because I did see episodes where she had to basically deal with Negan, because like Negan wasn't the threat that like this other bigger organization was. That was from like one of the larger cities. So it was like, she kind of had to make like this semi truce with him to begin with. But yeah, like, I mean, knowing that he was the one that took out your baby daddy and, you know, and all that stuff, like it, I don't know it. That's that combination was the most interesting.
Yeah.
Anyways, all that to say, there's plenty more zombie movies. I kind of hope that 28 Days Later trilogy kicks off another round of zombies. I'm not going to lie. I know The Walking Dead killed zombies for a lot of people, but I feel like it's been long enough. I feel like we can go back finally to that.
Exactly.
And zombies can be either the most woke things or the least woke. And I feel like we need to move away from the woke stuff. So that might be a good way to just kind of ease on out of this bullshit that we've been in for the past 4/10 years.
Yeah.
And I say that because Romero really, really, on that one that we're getting ready to review for him, tried his damnedest to go as woke as possible back during the 9/11 attack stuff. And
Jesus.
With mixed, you know, success.
Yeah.
For now, however, let's send this season off with a couple of great ones. From South Korea, we have Train to Busan, followed by the last truly great zombie film from the master himself, George A. Romero. We have Land of the Dead. We'll ignore the fact we did Diary of the Dead, but we'll ignore the fact that Survival ever existed. That movie doesn't exist and will never be brought up on this podcast after this season.
Yeah.
So, first up, if you're enjoying the podcast, we'd appreciate it if you could take the time to like, comment, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show.
Scope out our blue check mark on Twitter.
Slash X now.
Slash X, exactly, yeah. And follow us there because we are getting a lot of traction from the horror community. It's insane.
It's pretty nice to see. I mean,
yeah, I can't believe I was contacted by the director. Was it the director or the creator of is it Never Walk Alone?
Yeah, I think it's the director of Never Walk Alone. Yeah,
I contacted and they're like, hey, watch our movies, review them. Okay, say less, Sailor Moon.
We talked about doing that during
the slasher season,
mm-hmm. but we went through all the Jason movies and we just had to take a break. It was a lot.
Yeah, which is sad that that happened because with Freddy, we're like, we're not doing this. I don't think we made it through all the Freddy. Wait, did we? Didn't we?
We did. We didn't do that with Michael, though.
Michael.
Because we were like, fuck,
we can't
Michael's
do this.
Movies. Yes.
I wish we hadn't, and I wish we had watched because not one person I have ever spoken to was like, Never Walk Alone sucks.
Yeah.
No one has said that. No, never.
Yeah, Never Hike Alone as a series is pretty good. I did see like an offshoot of that series, which was, I can't even remember the name of it. It tries to take place after part 7 because it gets the same girl back who's the psychic or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's been captured by the government and they're trying to use her abilities to fight Jason. Or actually, they're trying to get her to summon Jason. And then somebody else is trying to summon Michael Myers and get him to fight
for whatever reason.
It's too much of a fan movie. It goes too far. But the one Never Hike Alone is really good. And I love the fact that they got Tom Matthews involved, and he's actually the good Tommy Jarvis in all three of them. So that makes a world of difference.
I forgot we were – not. I didn't forget. I mean, I remember. But we were contacted also by the studio who put out that Resident Evil fan film. And I've been hearing really good – and we never reviewed it. Clearly, we've run out of time in zombie season. But, we were also asked to review that movie. And we talked about it. We just haven't gotten around to it. I don't know that we're going to have to, God, I don't know if we're just going to have to like throw in a special here and there or something to make that happen.
That's the only way we can get it done. I would have to go back and watch it. I thought just throwing this out there, I mean, we'll give it its due, but just my initial overall thoughts on that fan film, it did some things that were closer to the game, well, way closer to the games than the fucking, Mila Jovovich movies, but it gets a little chaotic partway through, and I really didn't know what was going on. So I'll give it another shot and try to watch it and see if I come up to a different conclusion. But it's it started out really well, and then it had a good Resident Evil vibe, and then when it got to the action, it was a little too dark, a little too much going on. When you do a micro budget movie, tend to happen that way. So
exactly. Two Ronin Pictures is who contacted me, and I believe their film is called Biohazard, and it's a Resident Evil fan film.
Like I said, it starts out really well. It's just it kind of like whenever it gets partway through, it gets a little muddy. But
yeah.
which I didn't have an issue with in Never Hike Alone. I feel like they did a pretty good job of keeping that coherent all the way through. And actually, the effects are pretty damn good in Never Hike Alone. I'll give them that, too.
Yeah. So, anywho, all right. Well, we should probably get on the train and get moving, don't you think?
Yeah, before these zombies take us over. Train to Busan from 2016. And Lord help me, you guys are going to have to suffer through this Appalachian, accent trying to pronounce South Korean names.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Sorry for everybody involved. Tagline is get on board to stay alive.
It's clean. It's clear. It's straight to the point. I like it.
Directed by Yeon Sang-ho. Yeah. Written by Park Joo-suk and Yeon Sang-ho. Music by Young Guy. That's probably not how you pronounce it, but that's what it looks like. Young Guy Jang. So there you go. Budget of $8.5 million. It made $98.5 million. That is a fucking great turnaround.
That is what is that? A 1,000% return rate.
It's 10 times the amount that they made.
More than 10 times.
But here's the thing. How do you make a movie this fucking good for $8.5 million? Like, the effects in this are amazing. Like, when you hear that Disney for like $300 million makes, something shitty, like, let's see, the Marvels, for instance. I think they made that for closer to $400 million before advertising. And then you look at a movie like this, and they made it for $8.5 million with all those extras. There was some CGI, you could see it, but there was a lot of practical.
Oh yeah, that was more practical than anything. I don't know. Because my jaw literally hit the floor when you said $8.5 million, because that did not look like an $8.5 million film. However, even if they were able to film in just one location, because clearly they were on the train majority of the time, I get it. But even with that, do you know how busy train stations are in Asian countries? It's ridiculous. So either they had to rebuild a set or build a set that looked like it was a train, or they actually had some random carts that they could empty cars that they could use and on an empty track or a random track.
But that's the thing. If it was just a train, it would be one thing. But they have a station that they pull into, and they do amazing, visuals on that.
Yes.
Then they have a train yard where they have to switch trains before they can go the final leg. And then they have, at least a tunnel at the end of the movie that looks very post-apocalyptic.
Yes.
So it has enough settings to where it does not feel claustrophobic like most small budget movies.
I don't know how they pulled it off, but I am already impressed just with this first portion.
And here's the thing, even if it's like super cheap to film in South Korea, and I don't know if it is or not, it might be, but even if it is, and the exchange rate makes it to where $8.5 million gets you a lot more, for your bang for your buck in that country.
Yeah.
Why are more movies not being made that way? If they can pull this off, there's been a renaissance of like South Korean movies and like shows like, Squid Game is one of them. Mm-hmm. Parasite's like one of the movies that's kind of like, that's got a lot of South Korean actors in it. There's been several on Netflix, like Home is one of them. Home is a really good series. I don't know if you watched that one. It's based on like a manga type thing where these monster, like people, it's like a zombie apocalypse, but people are mutating into monsters like from Resident Evil more than they are, like just zombies themselves. Like they start out as zombies, but then they mutate into other things.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff like that from South Korea, and they're just knocking it out of the park. Like, they're doing a lot. In recent years.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just in shock over here.
And I'm going to butcher every one of these names, and so, yeah, you got to live with it. It'll get better in Land of the Dead, because I can actually pronounce some of those.
Oh, but, okay.
Gan Yu plays Suk Woo, who is the father and financial analyst in the movie. Starts out being kind of an ass, and they do a really good job of, I mean, you got to give this movie credit. They, with barely anything said from the main lead, I mean, he's very stoic.
Yeah.
They do a very good hero's journey for him, because he mm-hmm. goes from somebody who will sacrifice everybody but him and his daughter to somebody who will actually stand up and, you know, try to help others by the end of the movie. Like, he definitely has a character arc throughout the film.
She definitely pulls it out of him, so.
Yeah. And he's actually in Squid Game, three episodes. He kind of plays like this one guy who is, he's got like a suitcase, and he's kind of conducting deals when they get outside of the Squid Game or whatever.
Okay.
And he plays in a movie called Guardian, The Lonely and Great God. They got a lot of films that in South Korea that say God, and it's just like, they don't mean it in the sense that we do necessarily. Like, yeah. There's one movie they got about firefighters and they call them gods. It's almost like they call anybody who they hold in high esteem like a god or something. So, from outside appearances, at least.
Yeah.
We have Kim Soo-an, who plays Soo-an, who's daughter on her way to her mom's home in Busan. The only thing I saw her in was a movie called Project Silence. She's a pretty, I mean, now it's different. Like, we can kind of tell more like with our own, I mean, and I'm not trying to mean this any particular way, but you can tell a bad child actor in English.
Yes.
It's harder to do in another language because you don't really know, because also Asian children are more reserved than yes. American children. So when they're not overly expressive, you don't think anything about it because that's their culture.
Exactly.
So I feel like you can get by with a, I mean, and I'm not saying this, she could, I mean, I still think she was a good child actor. I'm just saying that if it would have been an American child or, you know, or an English speaking child, you would have expected maybe more from them, kind of like a Haley Joel Osment type situation to give them that, because they shouldn't be as reserved and kind of, you know, silent acting, you know,
yeah.
that sort of thing. But she does a really good job with what that, you know, what she has to do. I'm sorry, but this is one of those weird names and it's probably pronounced way differently, but Ma Dong Suk, plays Sang-hwa, who's the expecting father and brawler and shot caller in this movie. He's badass. Big burly guy. I mean, he just beats the shit out of people with his own fist in a lot of cases, is very dangerous when you're dealing with these kind of zombies.
One fist in the mouth and you're done.
Yeah, they just have to scratch a little bit of your, you know, your fist and you're out. He was in a movie called Holy Night Demon Hunters. We have Jung Yoo Mi, who plays Song Kyung, who's this Sang's pregnant wife in the movie. She's in another film called Sleep. We have So Hee, who plays Jin Hee, part of the baseball group. She's in love with Young. She's actually a girl pop group singer that turned actress. She was in a
K-pop.
South Korean. Yeah, she was in a K-pop group called Wonder Girls before she got into acting. And her first movie was called Hellcats, and it kind of looks like one of those movies where, you know, like you get attractive women and they kind of, you know, flirt and act slutty in it. And that's kind of movie Hellcats is. So, congrats to South Koreans for being what America was probably 20 years ago before girls have to be men and men have to be women and all this other bullshit that we're dealing with right now. So,
yeah.
Choi Woo Sik plays Young-guk. Again, I don't know. Baseball player in love with Jin Hee. He was in Parasite. I've heard great things about that movie. Don't know anything about it. Just know that it was a big, you know, Oscar type movie. And then rounding out there's a lot more people in the movie, but I tried to keep it like limited to the main heroes. And then this scumbag, Kim Yoo Sung, who plays Yeon Suk, who's the scummy CEO, who is basically everything that our main lead, Suk Woo, would have been if he didn't have his daughter around, because he's basically willing to sacrifice everybody just to try to live.
Yeah.
And he still gets bit and he still dies. So fuck him.
Damn.
And he was in a movie called Apocalypse Earth. So, you know, good on him, I guess. He does play a pretty good scumbag though. I mean,
yeah.
Like that one scene where they won't let any of them into the car And then whenever they do, they tell them they have to immediately get out of the car. And that's when the older lady fucks all of the rich people over. And then pretty nice of them. Synopsis for this movie, a chemical leak from a bio lab unleashes a viral contagion into the air that quickly turns every living thing around it into a homicidal, nearly unstoppable cannibal. As the virus spreads, a father and daughter decide to take a train ride to Busan to visit the girl's mother and are caught in the chaos. Will they survive? Is Busan actually safe, as the radio reports say? And then the final tagline for this movie, life or death, survival begins. Some quotes from the movie. We got Sue Ann, the little girl, saying, "Dad, you only care about yourself. That's why mommy left."
That was his turn.
Yeah.
That was his turning point.
We have Sang-hwa saying, "Hey, asshole, felt good to see your kid thanks to me. Are you grateful or what?" And then Suk-woo says, "Why is your ringtone so tacky?" Because he's got like this cheesy pop song on it or whatever. And then Sang-hwa's like, "What's wrong with it?" And then he stops and he's like, "Okay, how do I change it?" It's one of the few moments in the movie that actually has like comedy relief to it. We have Suk-woo says, "I'll take you to your mom no matter what." And then finally, Suk-woo, "This is the lever and this is the brake. Use it only when it's not dangerous, all right?" And that's when he finally makes his ultimate sacrifice so that they can get out of there. Ugh. Visuals. We already kind of hinted at this, but this movie's got fucking amazing visuals in it. I mean, the zombies falling out of the plate glass windows down onto the ground, and they got actors who could, I mean, they had to be like contortionists because... Oh, yeah. When they fell to the ground, they would immediately get up, and whatever part of their body was broke was still like limp behind them, and they were just like twitching as they ran after you, you know?
Yes. And I'm going to get back to that in just a minute because I have a question I did not understand. But I wanted to say about the visuals, the zombies, as I hit my microphone, sorry, everyone. the zombies looked natural. They did a really good, the first zombie was almost too pretty to be a zombie, but she was a fresh zombie. And you could tell which zombies had been a zombie a little bit longer, but they never looked too much. I think they had just the right amount of, hey, we're dead, but we're running around.
Yeah, and some of them just looked like they were, you know, just like 28 days later, they just had like a rage virus or something going on.
Exactly, yes.
But they did establish in this movie, you die first and then you're reanimated. So it is a true zombie, like in the Romero sense.
Yes. And they did use the word in the movie.
Yes. They used the word zombie.
Yes. Although they didn't want them to use that word, which is a very South Korean thing. They're like, don't believe, you need to trust your government. Don't believe what you're reading. Don't believe the rumors. Trust your government. It's like,
So I don't know if you noticed this. It's just something that stuck in my mind. At one of our most popular episodes this season, Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
Yes.
One of the first zombies that's in the movie in Scout's Guide, besides the one that attacks, you know, the guy from Workaholics whenever he's the, you know, janitor dancing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Is the zombie deer.
Oh, yes.
Because they run over the deer and it gets up and it leaves. Same thing with this movie, and they came out around the same time within a year of each other. It's just really weird that they both decided a deer was like, and the only thing I can think of is, have you heard of the wasting disease that deer have now? Have you heard about that?
No, I don't think I have.
It's really scary. Deer have basically a zombie virus right now.
No.
And it's, they waste away. They start doing weird shit. They're like, you know, flopping around and, it's scary as fuck to see them, and they claim for now that when humans eat that meat, it's still okay. I don't trust it. I'm just telling
fuck that
you.
Noise.
I'm just telling. It's called blue tongue, I believe is the local term for it because they develop a blue tongue. But they literally are like zombies, and I'm wondering if maybe that disease like inspired all these movies to like use deer as the primary like animal they show that has the zombie virus. But
that would make the most sense.
But it's interesting because this movie starts off with one guy trying to drive through, you know, with his cattle or his, you know, whatever his animals are, livestock, through that, you know, contagion area. And he runs over the deer. And of course, the deer gets up and does that weird, like, head flop thing that they do and shows that it's one of the first infected, you know, creatures. But
CGI was terrible.
Yeah, you know, bad things are going to happen after you see that.
Oh, but, yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, okay. So the question I had is when, I don't know. I will say the father, the main character, the dad, trying to get his daughter to Busan. When he was talking to his friend, he was asking him, can you help us? Can we not get quarantined? You know, blah, blah, blah. And his friend was kind of telling him where to go and what areas were messed up and what areas were safe. And it showed one area that looked perfectly safe. Some kids were skateboarding. And then you see a helicopter go over them, and all of a sudden bodies drop. It's zombies. They get up. They start running. Where did those bodies come from? The fucking helicopter?
Oh, did you not see in the helicopter there was like five or six of them holding on to the bottom?
Okay.
And they were dragging. They were trying to get into the helicopter, and they started falling off of it. And then, you know, when they got up and started moving, that's when they got the,
that,
you know,
makes
the
sense.
Kid.
I was like, did they just fucking drop these zombies off in a safe area to make it not safe? Is what I didn't know. Okay, that makes sense now.
I was just looking up blue tongue. Oh, man, it's so nasty. They also call it epizootic hemorrhagic disease. The deer suffer weakness and lethargy, fever, edema, loss of fear of humans. That's scary. I mean, that's the other thing about these deer. They'll literally come up to humans and they act like there's nothing abnormal about it. You know, it's like that. You'll just see them like randomly, you know, running up to you, which is scary in its own right. Circling, meaning they just run around in circles, don't do anything. I mean, they're like psychotic. They have swollen tongue, eyelids, neck, or head, bloody discharge from the nose, and lesions or sores in their mouth. And they still say it's not harmful to humans, but you should probably not harvest these animals if you kill them.
They said that it's transferred by midges, which is the bite of a fly.
Yeah.
No.
Of a gnat, no less.
Oh, my God. No.
Yeah. So, I mean, let me see. Let's do a little bit of research here. Blue tongue disease discovered. Let's see if it coincides with these movies. It was first described. This disease goes all the way back to Southern Africa in 1800. So, it's been around for a long time.
Jesus.
But it just started happening within like the past 15 years that you really start hearing about it, at least in Appalachia. So, I mean, it wasn't that common until recently. I don't know. Scary shit. I don't know. Between that and cordyceps, I think the zombies are eventually going to happen. I'm just saying. And thankfully we have these movies to educate ourselves on.
Yeah, I'm watching.
You know that whole discussion we had earlier about using true crime off podcast, which I thought used true crime to educate yourself. I think more people need to be watching zombie movies. I'm just throwing that out there.
Oh, these deers.
All right,
are
so you talked
out.
About the zombies falling from the helicopter.
Yes.
The zombies that were running, that this scene always stands with me every time I watch the movie. When they go to the first station they think is clear, and they get to where the army is, the one that's supposed to be protecting, the one that's supposed to be, you know, holding the zombies off, and they see that they're all zombies and they're twitching.
Yes.
Like just standing there twitching.
I was fucking, my heart sank.
that movie, I mean, that part of the movie is pretty fucking scary to me. I mean, it's just like when they get there and they're just like, the zombies are just twitching and they're like, and then they smell them and then they come running after them.
And it's like, they're going down. As soon as everything was just too quiet, when they walked out into the train station, I was like, this ain't right. Tank rat.
Let's see. The train itself looked good. I liked some of the things they did with the train visually. Like, I thought it was really smart of the rich people. I'll give them their little bit of credit, even though they were assholes. They took the fire extinguisher and like basically blanked out the windows so that the zombies couldn't see them.
Yeah.
That was really smart. See, the way that they've had the zombies in the trains, like whenever the heroes came back from the station and they were separated and they had to work their way through them one at a time. Those were some pretty wild scenes. Like, you know,
because
they had to wait for the tunnels because the zombies couldn't see. So they had to use that to their advantage.
You know? That was fucking, ooh. Yeah, that was anxiety inducing.
And I know this kind of works in the story a little bit too, because of what it is, but I mean, it all kind of mingles or whatever. What else? Visually, just the way that the zombie bites are, the visual effects on that, the way that they do the black veins. I always like that in the movies. Yes. You can see the actual virus spreading throughout the body. And then they get the cataracts over eyes, you know, that looks like, you know, the dead.
Yeah.
The scenes in the train railway where the actual train, the one that's flaming, comes up and it pitches over. And then all the scenes after that where the main heroes that are left along with that poor homeless guy, they're like underneath the two trains as they're like slowly collapsing and they have to get their way out of it.
That was good. That's like a video. It was almost like a video game. I swear, like, I don't know.
And then there was all the zombies in the train above them, and they were just waiting for the glass to break so they could all come spilling out, which they eventually do. They just did such a good job with the zombies in this movie. Like, it that's why it's a modern classic in the genre. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny that it's taken me this long, which I kind of have to wait, because, of course, the hubby is mad. Well, you watch that movie, you won't watch it with me. And it's like, I don't watch anything with you. Like, we have established this, that I don't. He put on this movie last night that is perfectly me, and I didn't watch it. I fell asleep. I was tired. And it's like, this movie, I cannot believe I've slept on this movie. It is so good.
I don't know when I first heard about this movie. It was one of those things where I was like, I have to watch it. And then, you know, because I'm really big in this genre. And then, like, as soon as I watched it, I'm like, okay, this is going in the stack of, like, we'll always watch. Spoiler alert, folks, it's 5 out of 5 movies, so there's nothing to really say about it. But
we'll give our reasonings later, though, as if we, I don't know. I feel like the whole going through piece by piece is going to be the reasoning, honestly.
I mean, and the story is simple, but it's effective. It's the father-daughter dynamic holds it throughout the whole movie. You get to the end of the movie, and then, you know, him making the sacrifice, which is, it works on a lot of levels, because, and modern Hollywood has forgotten this, men have a power fantasy where we go out in a blaze of glory defending our family. That is what the power fantasy is for men. I don't know if you're aware of this, it's a whole meme, but men have this fantasy that they go out fighting a bunch of, like, overwhelming numbers of enemies, get mortally wounded in the process, and then die on, like, some bench with snow coming down.
Snow! I was just going to say!
Knowing that they have defended their family and that they've done what they were supposed to do as men. You know?
I'm so dead right now, because my friend keeps sending me memes of this and dying, and it's like somebody just sitting out in the snow just falling all over you, and it's like, what is up with guys having this fantasy of fucking dying mortally wounded in the fucking snow, bleeding out in the snow?
But you have to have defended your family before this happens, or somebody you love.
Well,
that's the other part of the fantasy.
Okay, but there's no, up until now, I have not gotten any implication that that's how you're bleeding out. You're just bleeding out in the snow. So, needless to say, I've not been a fan.
That's the past context to it. You there was, like, say, a John Wick situation where a bunch of enemies came, tried to kill your family. You got them, but they got you, and now you're dying. And you die happy knowing that you saved your family from it.
Jesus fuck.
But I'm just saying, this movie plays into that, because literally, what does the main hero do? I mean, like, he defends them against that evil CEO who's turned into a zombie, gets bit in the process, realizes he's going to change, and before he does, he tells, you know, the one guy's pregnant wife, and his daughter, you'll get to safety. This is how you control the train. I love you. And basically, he closes the door, locks it, so if he turns too quick, he won't get back in there.
Yeah.
And then he chooses to fall off the train instead of, like, turning and going against them.
Which he's gonna turn anyways.
He is, but I mean, like, the notion that he is, you know, willingly, you know, like, he spent the whole movie trying to save his daughter, and he knows that the only way to save her now is to let go. Wait, and it's just like, it's man, it gets to you whenever you see it. Like, in the way they play the music with it, the music's perfect. Seeing his daughter crying at the same time. I mean, the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay, wait. I have just realized something. In my excitement of watching this movie and getting from one point to the other, one station to the next, if you will, can these zombies be killed?
Yes, head wounds take them out like Romero zombies.
Okay, so maybe if his spine did, because it's established that, you know, head wound or spine sometimes.
But some of these zombies fall from great heights true. And it doesn't seem to snap their spine. So, okay, I mean, never I don't, mind. I'm just saying.
Never mind. So not the spine. I'm just hoping he had enough head trauma that, you know, he didn't come back.
Hopefully when he fell on the track, that was the end for him.
Yeah. You know?
Because he really didn't have a way to kill himself. He didn't have, like, because it's South Korea, it's not America, they didn't have guns everywhere. The best they had were baseball bats. And at one point in time, the big burly guy gets, like, you know, a police, you know, ballistic, or, you know, one of those shields they use whenever they're riot gear. And then he's got, like, the billy club, and that's the best he's got, you know.
Yeah, I did see that police riot. As soon as I saw the police riot gear when they were going down on the escalator, I was like, y'all are fucked.
Yes, because you can't take those zombies out.
No, you can't take them out, but, like, the police guy left his shield. Why would he have left that? They wouldn't have just left that there. They're zombies now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, I get what you're saying. That was a hint that something wasn't right.
I already knew something wasn't right when they weren't, like, right there at the train station, because they would have been there stopping people that maybe had to be questioned, or letting them know, hey, you're coming this way, we're going to
that parking. Was really weird. Also, that's another turning point in the father's, like, arc, because he's basically made a deal with one of his high brokerage, you know, associates. It's like, you meet me at a different part of the train station, I'll get you out of there, you let the plebes, you know, be sacrificed to whatever.
Yeah.
And he's on his way there when the homeless man's like, hey, this guy's going somewhere else, I'm going to follow him. And it's a good thing he did, because if it wasn't for that homeless man, the main character would have been dead in that scene, you know, because he ran to the wrong. I mean, there was also zombies on his part of it, so he didn't really have much of a choice.
Yeah.
I'll give this movie this also for story and acting. You really get to know the characters really, really well for what minimal amount of time they give you setting them up. Like, the only two characters they really have time to set up in this movie is the father and daughter.
Yes.
And of course the mom, like the grandma or whatever. And they do have that one scene where he's talking to the grandma and he hears her, you know, basically turn into one of them, which is a pretty good scene. But, like, for them to set up the big burly guy and his pregnant wife, and then the two baseball kids that are in love with each other, and make you actually care about them in the short amount of time that they're introduced, and then hate that one CEO guy as much as you do. I feel like they did a pretty good job with introducing the characters.
Yeah, they did.
But it doesn't, I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't take much in these movies. You've got to be simple with it. You can't have these elaborate backstories. Just give them enough of a human hook that it's like, okay, like, for instance, like the two lovers or whatever, it's pretty heartbreaking for them whenever the CEO fucks them over, basically allows the one girl to get bit, and then the one guy holds her until she turns and then bites him. You know, that's how they go out.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you feel about the acting in the movie? Because it's, like I said, it's a foreign movie. You got to read subtitles, but and also Asian culture is a little bit more reserved, so they're not as emotive like sometimes it's like you would find in, you know, probably like, you know, Western, you know, media. But how did you feel about, like, the acting that way?
First off, I hate subtitles, you know that. I'm not a fan, but I was able to get through this one, and I thought the acting, it felt, to the best of my knowledge, natural. So I didn't think anything was bad. I didn't think anything was overdone. I didn't think anything was cheesy. And like I said, to the best of my knowledge of the culture, I imagine that this is how it would be. So I would say it was really good.
I mean, that's how I feel about it. I mean, they got the point across, and it feels natural enough without, 'cause my problem, I mean, I know this is a different culture, but like Japanese movies, sometimes they go too out there with their act. They go too anime with it. You know, anime is all about being like loud and like very expressive, and some of their movies are that way. And I kind of like the South Korean version better, where it's like more down to earth, like, you know, how people would actually be in that situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Music was really good in the movie. I mean, especially the scene with, you know, at the end of it. And then, of course, that song that the little girl's singing, which was the one, it's a good tie back because, you know, the father watches the little video camera that his mom gives him of, like, the missed song recital at the school that he was supposed to have been there for and he didn't go to because of work. And his little daughter didn't sing that one song. And at the end of the movie, they tie it back. She's singing the song in the tunnel, and it's the only thing that saves her and the pregnant wife or whatever, because if they couldn't hear her singing, they were getting ready to snipe them.
But yeah.
I thought that was a good callback, a really good callback, music wise. Now, you did not watch the prequel or the sequel, correct?
No, I did not know they existed. I didn't even know about the prequel anime until today.
I would highly recommend you watch the prequel anime. It is very dark, but it very much fits the theme of this movie. It's like very close to how this movie feels. It's kind of got a father-daughter situation going on. That's all I'm going to say about that, because there's more to it whenever you get into the movie. But it's set in their, like, Seoul. It's called Seoul Station, so it's set in Seoul, Korea. And it's watching the entire city basically collapse, like, over the course of one night is what you're basically seeing, because the zombies spread like so quickly and in such a, you know, massive population. It's really well done. The animation's really well done. The zombies look good. They look more dead in that one, though, they do in this one. They put more like gray faces on them and stuff, because where it's animated, but the animation's really good. I dug it. If you like anime, you'll like this, you know, type, you know, movie.
Yeah.
The sequel, which is called Train to Busan Presents Peninsula, I believe is the name of it. Different kind of movie. I mean, it's got the same zombies, and the cool thing about it is it's set 4 years on, and it basically sets up a world where they cordoned off South Korea, and North Korea tried to defend themselves from it, and they did a good job for a bit, but then they collapsed. So basically the rest of the world kind of is like, you know, prevented the spread, which I don't know, as quickly as it spreads, I think the whole world would have been fucked. But they established a reality where the world is kind of like cordoned off South Korea, kind of like in 28 Days Later,
yeah,
or 28 Weeks, where they said that it only affected Britain or whatever. Same situation.
Lies.
But it's got a situation where, like, the main character who starts the film, who's different from it, he's not one of the people in this movie. And they have a line, too, which I don't know how I feel about it. There's one of the Americans talking on a talk show, and he mentions how Busan was the last populated center that was supposed to have been safe, but time proved that it wasn't. So it kind of makes me feel like you're shitting on the original movie, because the whole point was those two survivors getting to safety and actually having a chance. And they basically throw out there that Busan fell at some point in the 4 years after all that anyway. So I don't know how I feel about that line, but regardless of it, you have a different main character. He's like ex-military. He's hired by this one guy, promised a shitload of money, like $2.5 million US, to go to the peninsula, which was the last place that they were supposed to be evacuating people. And him and a group of other people are supposed to go there with a bunch of military gear, collect this armored car's worth of loot, basically. That's where the money's coming from. And then call them up, and they're supposed to be extracted. Well, the whole plan goes to shit, is summary of it. But the movie is really good, because it shows like the apocalypse, like this movie couldn't, because this movie just basically takes place at the beginning. Peninsula shows like a very run down, there's broken down cars everywhere. I really dig the look of it. It looks like a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
The only bad thing is it's not really a scary movie per se, because it focuses more on how a crazed military that was left on that island to defend for themselves become basically like Lord of the Flies situation, where they're just roving gang of, like, if they catch you, they're going to rape you or use you for their own Squid Games type situation. And it's a lot of action in the movie, so it's a totally different feel in this movie. It's more like a zombie action movie than it is like a zombie horror type movie.
Yeah.
So if you want a movie feeling like this, watch the prequel, which is Soul Station. If you want more of a, I would say it's almost like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon type action in some scenes. If you want something like that with guns and a lot of stuff like that, Peninsula is fun. I actually enjoyed the movie. It's just, it doesn't feel like a scary movie, really.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Trivia for this one, the actor Ma Dong-suk, the one with the pregnant wife, used to be Gong Yoo's personal trainer, the main character's personal trainer, so that's kind of funny.
Interesting, yeah.
The filmmaker Edgar Wright, who made Shaun of the Dead, was a big fan of this film, and he recommended the film in a tweet and called it the best zombie movie that he's seen in, that he had seen in forever. So that's a pretty good call out whenever you have, you know, Shaun of the Dead director saying that for you.
Yeah.
Train to Busan is director Yang Song-ho's first live-action film. Wow. His previous works were all animated. That's why Soul Station is so good.
Damn.
The word zombie is mentioned once in this movie, so there you go.
Yes.
An animated prequel, Soul Station, was also directed by him and released less than a month after this movie was made. So he had that ready to go quick.
Holy fuck.
Given that this film was the ninth most successful Korean movie in history, there was instant talk of a sequel, which
This was only the ninth most successful, for less than $9 million and made almost $100 million. Yeah, and it's the ninth? Holy fuck.
But given that, they tried to get him to make a sequel and he turned it down, but ironically he would change his mind 3 years later and start work on a Peninsula, which came out in 2020.
Okay.
Train to Busan became the first South Korean film to cross the $1 million mark at the Singapore box office. It was nominated for a 2017 Asian Film Award for Best Actor for Suk Woo, who, you know, the main role. Ma Dong-suk was nominated for the Best Supporting Actor, so the two main leads in it got, you know, nominations. The first South Korean film to have wide theatrical release in India, and it actually became very popular in India. It's like one of their top grossing movies there. It became the highest grossing Korean film in Malaysia, Hong Kong, and Singapore. It began filming in April 26, 2015 and finished on April 19, 2015. So it only had, let's see, April, May, June, July, August. It only had like three or four months to film this. Like, okay. Is all it took them.
Fuck, that's insane.
This film was very well received in India, like I said. The Hindi dubbed version was screened multiple times in various parts of India.
Okay.
Jin Mo Yang was nominated for 2017 Asian Film Award in the Best Editor category for this movie, which the editing is pretty fucking good because it's like, it's breakneck, you know, editing, but it's not that kind of editing where you feel like nauseated, like the Bourne movies where the actions, the camera's always all over the place. It's, I hate that type of, you know, action movie, to be honest, but this one's not, doesn't do that. This served as a reunion film for Gong Yoo and Jung Yoon-mi, who both starred in the 2011 film Silenced. On August 2016, this film set a record as the first Korean film of 2016 to break the audience record of over 10 million theatergoers.
Damn.
Now, this is not the first Zombies on a Train film, however. Horror Express from 1972 tackled a similar subject 44 years earlier, albeit less frenetically. So,
okay, yeah.
Slow-moving Romero zombies on a train. I don't know if that's going to be that great of a movie, just saying.
It's still pretty good when you, like, maybe have one sitting a few seats ahead of you and you still have to get past it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. This type of zombie works better if you're going to do it on a closed, like, situation, though.
There was a scene in this movie where all of a sudden a bunch of the zombies start bunching up in a cart, and it was definitely CGI, but it was st- still scary. Oh,
we didn't even talk about this. What about whenever they tried to get on that train that the three main characters left were on, and they were all piling on each other and slowing the train down to the point where the main lead, the father, had to stomp on them to get them to the primary zombies to, like, let loose so the whole horde would, like, you know, let go.
Ugh, my God. That was the whole – there was just so much, like, anxiety portions of this film that is what kept it going, at least in terms of the pace of the film. Because for the most part, you know, yes, when they kind of get going, they kind of get going. But up leading up, it's – well, I don't know. I feel like it starts pretty fucking fast because you don't really get an explanation into what happened or anything too much anyways.
Other than that bowel leak, that's the only thing you get.
Exactly. So you kind of – it just kind of rolls right into it. But it's still kind of slow, you know, to kick off.
Yeah, there's not like immediate, like, you know, I was going to compare it to World War Z. Like, the zombies in this are the same type of zombies, like running like madmen, but they're so much better in this movie. Like, this is the superior version of World War Z, the movie at least, not the book, but the movie. And that movie started off immediately with, like, people, like, getting attacked in the city. Like, they gave you no leeway in that movie, where this one, you got a little bit of time to build up before it really kicks in.
Yeah.
It's currently, as of at least 2023, being remade. They changed the destination to New York, and presumably the country will be United States. The language will be English. The new title will be The Last Train to New York, and we'll have as director, Timo Tiwanto, who's the writer of Gary Dauberman, who's going to be associated. I don't know if I want an English version of this movie. I'm just throwing it out there. It could be great. When it comes out, and it could lead it. I mean, it could be part of the new zombie renaissance with 28 days later, you know, or 28 years later, you know, cycle. But some of these movies, when they get changed over to English, they become pure shit.
Yeah. This is one of those movies that I wouldn't really want to be touched.
Well, it just makes me worried because I don't think that. So say they turn into English and they do all that. Are we still? How is it going to be written? Is it going to still have, like, the emphasis on a father-daughter situation? Or is it going to be a, you know, well, we can't have that. We've got to have, like, because of how things are in America right now and in Hollywood in particular, we've got to have a strong woman at the lead. So maybe she was a boss bitch, you know, that ran, like, you know, some major corporation, and, like, she didn't connect with her daughter. So now it's like a woman's going to, you know, do her thing. You know, it's like, all right, how many movies we're going to have to see with this in it? I mean, at this point, we've kind of, you know, even if they do it well, it's just like been there, done that. I mean, just take a look at Furiosa. That movie actually was good, but nobody watched it because they were like, we're tired of the boss bitch stuff. Like, stop it, you know?
Yeah.
Finally, the sour worm candy that is offered to Sue Ann is the famous German candy brand Trolley. So there you go. I already said it. It's 5 out of 5. Like, the father-daughter aspect, the zombies, how they look, the visuals in this movie, the action, the horror in the movie. Like, I don't know what else you want in a movie. Like, this is literally what you want in a zombie movie.
Yeah, it was a good one to end on because I was not expecting this. I was not excited to watch this film. That's one of the reasons I've never watched this film is that I was like, a foreign film with subtitles on a train. I don't want to be like, we've seen this before, because we haven't. We've talked about one other train movie that I've never seen. And I'm like, I mean, like, it just sounds meh. No, it was not meh. It was definitely a 5 out of 5. Everything was good. I didn't quite notice the music. Clearly, you hear the song at the end. That's shit. I'm tormented for the rest of my life. Too many people have passed recently. One of my, I don't know how he passed, but one of my friend's husbands passed, and this was a song of theirs. And I saw was a post of her saying, until we meet again. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then I find out he's no longer here. And I'm like, I'm just seeing this. And then, like, of course, this ending of this movie. And I'm like, you know?
It you think that you're through the worst of the feels, as it were, until you hear the little girl singing the actual song that she's supposed to sing. And it makes it even worse because her little voice carrying through that tunnel and what she's actually, and her, the song is actually about meeting somebody like that, you know, again, and some other time or place or whatever. And it's just like, fuck, you really, really laid it on right at the end, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, that makes the movie. It's like, that gives you the stakes. It's, you know, it might be small, but we don't need large stakes in these movies. Sometimes it's better to have the small stakes. 'Cause like World War Z, yeah, he's saving the world, but I mean, I don't know. Like, something gets lost along the way when you have Gary Sue, you know, going on. So.
Exactly.
Anyways, I mean, we've got one more movie to discuss this season. It's Land of the Dead from George Romero, but spoiler alert, it's not as good as this one.
It no, really it's good, but it's not this good.
It's not this good. I figured I would save the last one for Romero out of respect for the man who got the genre started, but really other people have started to pick up and figured out how to make the genre, you know, work really well. So, and this is one of them.
All right,
folks, with that, peace be with you
and with your spirit.